ladies and gentlemen, welcome to all. My name is Debbie and I am an alcoholic. Our fifth tradition states that our primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Valley Group honors this tradition by rigorously searching for the finest recovery speakers in the Western Hemisphere. Can you hear me now? So that they can share their experience, strength, and hope with us. Each week we recognize one of these speakers for their service to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is now time to recognize Value Group's Outstanding Speaker of the Week. The nominee for this category has a sobriety date of September the 15th, 1988. He has been continuing service in his first 18 years of sobriety as a cook for many AA functions. I've been to them. They're really good cooks. He's cooked for Richie's Barn Dance and the Sober Fest and many other functions. Today, he's actively a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. However, he's not in service. Because his service is to his family today. He spends time with his family, his children, and his grandchildren, and they do a lot of traveling. And his AA motto is, he absolutely insists on having fun. So with that, may I have the envelope, please? Thank you. The moment we've all been waiting for. And the winner of the Outstanding Speaker of the Week Award is Bubba W.
Well, there's some faces here I haven't seen. And I've been coming to these meetings for a few years now. But I'll let you know, my name's Jerry, but I made a mistake of wearing my Bass Fishing Club jacket to one of my first meetings, and it had Bubba on there. That was my nickname in bass fishing. And so I'm Bubba. But not to confuse you, we're both alcoholics. Guys, the only thing, when I was early on in sobriety, Cliff Roach came and spoke to us in Visalia over St. Paul's. And my sponsor had me, he got me active in service right away, and he had me be the 10-minute speaker that night. And I got to talk to Cliff Roach quite a bit before the meeting. After the meeting, while he was waiting for a plane to take off out at the airport, and he had heard a little of my story that night, and he told me, he says, everyone doesn't have to be, at the very, very, very low bottom to be an alcoholic. And he says, I heard your story. It's similar to mine. And he said, don't ever change it. So you guys that know me, you're probably tired of hearing this, but I hope my story never changes, because I have a life today that I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy. And the main reason I do is because I got a DUI, and the court system sent me here. And today I'd like to say that God did an intervention on me through the California Highway Patrol, and I thoroughly believe that, because I was very sick. Later on I found out I was spiritually bankrupt. And my life was going to hell, in a basket. And but I stopped drinking. I had drank from the time I was 14 years old till I was 48, almost 49 years old when I got here. And I could quit drinking for long periods of time over those years, when my wife at the time would get on my case, or when I had to clean my act up and take care of my business a little better. I had a small business here in Visalia for 25 years. And this time, I had to quit drinking one more time. And the day after I got that DUI, I started getting deathly sick. And I was ignorant to what, at that time, to what the disease of alcoholism is. And I ended up in Tulare District Hospital, and it wasn't a very pretty sight. I was, for the first time that I know of, I was having heavy withdrawals from alcohol. I was passing kidney stones, and my blood pressure was out of sight, and my doctor at that time, he's retired now, he knew a lot about alcoholism, Dr. Gettle from Tulare, and the disease was in his family, and he helped me, and I was finally willing for some help, and the doctor, before I got to that hospital, though, the night I got that DUI, I'd left Tommy's Lounge over in Tulare, and I love country western music. You know, as far as I'm concerned, there's only two types of music, and that's country and western. And so we were, you know, dancing, having a good time. We had closed the beer booths down at the fair, myself and a bunch of my buddies, and having a good time. And I left there. And got a couple blocks away from the bar, and I didn't live that far from it. And the highway patrol pulled me over, and I was driving my little '72 Chevy Stepside. I'd spent a few years, you know, restoring it, and I put a lot of time and money into it, and I didn't want to stop and be towed, so I drove on to my house a few more blocks, and they gave me the sobriety test out on the sidewalk in front of my house, you know, and all the neighbors, you could see the porch lights come on and the doors open, and I'm entertaining the neighborhood, you know. And but there was two of them, a young patrolman, and they gave me the test, and he says, "Well, you did good on these." He says, "Are you going out drinking anymore tonight?" And I said, "Why? The bars are closed, you know." And but the older one says, "No, he's been in that bar long enough, and he's smell reeks of alcohol." I says, he wanted to take me in, and about 3.5, 4 years before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, situation arose in my life, and we had family counseling, and my wife at that time had started going to Al-Anon, and they turned around, the older one, and he says, "What do you think, Mrs. Weatherford? Should we take him or keep him?" And her exact words, and pardon my French, but she says, "Take the son of a bitch and keep him," you know. And boy, if I could have got a hold of her that night, I'd have, so I think I'd have probably choked the hell out of her, you know. But anyway, that's how I got there. And the doctor, he kept me there, and he let me know what I was going through, and he gave me the easier, softer way, gave me that drip system, you know, and everything. I was not only friends with him, I'd went to quite a few dinners, you know, the board of directors had, and my wife and I always, I went to those with her when I was sober, or could remember to go. And he was a good man, and he had told me for many years that I might have a problem with drinking, and I might ought to think about going to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I told him where he could put AA, you know. And but he got me through that detox period, and the kidney stones, they blasted those, and I was feeling pretty good after about 7 or 8 days. And but he told me, he said, "Jerry, you're at the point now, if you drink again," that was in September, and he says, "you may not live to see the new year," you know. And I don't think that was a spiritual awakening then, but it was a rude awakening, you know, because I insist on having fun and enjoying life. And I've been able to do that. God has been good to me through my life. I'm just a little country kid, I guess, born and raised over in Tulare, and middle of my sophomore year in high school, my parents moved to Southern California, and I didn't like where I was at down there. I always wanted to be back in the valley, but you know, I was good in sports in school, played baseball and football, and I had good grades. I carried a college prep, in school. And, parents raised me going to church. I was baptized when I was about 8 years old. So I had a good chance, you know, the fundamentals of growing up and having a good life. And I just chose to live the self-will run riot way of life. You know, I like to drink and party, and I got to drag race cars. There's a lady, the first lady of drag racing, is sitting in the house with us tonight. And I got to see her, you know, down at Pomona years ago in the 60s, you know, 50s and 60s. And I got to race sports cars. I got to race motorcycles. I got to race boats, FK boats and enduro boats. And I got to bass fish all over the country in fish bass tournaments. And all that time, I was drinking and having fun, you know. And it caught up with me, because I got to a point where I couldn't. When I took one drink, I didn't know where I would end up. When I was fishing those bass tournaments, I'd pay anywhere from $500 to $1,000 entry fee to fish them, and much more money than that, you know, to travel there and stuff. And I would go, and I would pay a real professional, one of the top notches. I'd pay him $250 a day for a couple of days to take me and show me what they knew on the lake. And then the night before the tournament, I'd get drunk and I couldn't get up and blast off the tournament, you know. That's where it started taking me. And that was just the very beginning. That wasn't bad, but it got worse. And my business I had here in town, a little muffler shop, and I got to the point where I would run my business from the end of the bar at the wagon wheel. They had a payphone there at the end of the bar, you know, and the guys working for me, I'd check with them periodically, and sometimes I'd make it back to the shop, sometimes I wouldn't. And it got worse. It got to the point where I'd go to lunch, and I wouldn't get back for 3 or 4 days. And that's when, as I understand it now, that's when the blackout drinking started. And so I've been the full gamut. I'm a real alcoholic. And I had no idea what alcoholism is, the disease of it. And believe me, it is a disease, and I have it. But I was so sick when I got here. If I don't say this, Pam won't talk to me again. But when I started going to AA through the Alano Club, and I'll tell you why I did. When I was doing my Sundays out at Bob Wiley's for that DUI, the guys told me there's a place called the Alano Club. It's next door to Mata's restaurant over on Santa Fe, and they have 3 meetings a week. You could go Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and I had 12 meetings that I had to attend. The court made sentence me to. So I chose to go there because they told me they're only an hour long, and the ones at night are an hour and a half, and you don't have to listen to so much bullshit, you know. And the easier, softer way us alcoholics would take, that's what I did. And I walked in that meeting. I didn't want anybody to know I was going to an Alano Club, heaven forbid, you know. And everybody knew I was a drunk, but I didn't want them to know. So I'd walk in the front door of Mata's, park my truck right in front, walk out the back door of the restaurant, and walk in the back door of the Alano Club, you know. And I thought I was real hip, slick, and cool, you know. But anyway, sitting in there, and the 12 steps and 12 traditions on the wall, and I heard people talk, and I thought they said that our lives had been, we were powerless over alcohol, and our wives had become unmanageable, you know? And And I swear to God to you, I thought, because my wife at the time, she had been to Al-Anon for 4 years, and damn, she got real unmanageable, you know. But it takes, it takes what it takes. I had two people sponsor me. They told me that I was a very sick person. One of them's dead now. He died sober from a freak accident, Butch Mitchell, so I'll use his last name. You guys all hear about Grass or Grasshole around the program that does all the interventions. Well, those two guys told me I was sick enough that I needed two sponsors to get well. So they would spend time with me at my shop. They'd both be there in the morning. And one of them would go and do their business, and the other would stay with me. And they did that for quite a while. And I'm very grateful they did, because they gave me they got me going on a good foundation. Like most everything I've done in my life, I've always been very competitive. When you're 5 foot. Five, just a shade under, you got a inferiority complex about being short. You got to be better at everything than anyone else, and that's the way I felt all of my life. And I've learned, through the fourth step and work in the other steps and all the character defects and things we work on, that was part of my problem, my personality problem. Anyway, I got into this and I jumped in feet first. After a while, when I first started going to meetings, I wouldn't admit that I was an alcoholic. And that's just the type of person I am, because I didn't know what an alcoholic was. I was just a drunk. Then when I people would call on me to share, and I'd say, my name's Jerry, and I'm here for information only. Leave me alone. I wanted to get that court card signed and get on and, start drinking again or living life. One thing I left out here, when I got that cards, got the alternative services is where the court sent me, and I had three of those little white cards, four numbers on each one of them, I didn't mind paying the fine for the DUI. I didn't really mind going to Bob Wiley's and going to the DUI classes. The only thing I didn't like was they sentenced me there and I had to pay for going there. I didn't like that. But I really didn't mind it that much. But when this little lady at the time, she was a Latino lady, and she was sitting behind a double desk. And I know why she was sitting behind that double desk, because when she told me I was going to have to go to 12 AA meetings, I wanted to reach across that desk and slap the shit out of her, the Butch and Grass, they got all kinds of literature for me to read on alcoholism as a disease, and videos and cassettes and everything like that. And I was sitting in a DUI class in Tulare over at the courthouse. And highway patrolman was instructing that class, Mark, he showed us a little film on the THIQ factor that the doctor talked about at a seminar for other doctors, and explained that THIQ factor. And that brought it all together. That's the hereditary part of this disease. It'll never become active unless you drink a lot for long periods of time, so even if you were born with a gene. My dad was an alcoholic, he died an alcoholic, and I saw that death, and it wasn't very pretty, but he was basically a good man. But when he talked about that night, and it was like someone took a sledgehammer and hit me right between the eyes. And I looked up, and I said, God, I need help. I think that was the beginning. And shortly after that, I wouldn't take a trip for 60 days, the 60-day trip. I wouldn't, 24-hour trip, I wouldn't take one because I wasn't an alcoholic. And for my 90-day trip, I asked Mark, the highway patrolman that was doing that DUI class. I had started delving into this, and I admitted to my innermost self that I have a problem, and I asked him if I could, any way I could be excused from this meeting and make it up, because I wanted to get that 90-day chip. And he told me, no, if you just pay your, I think it was $15, just pay your money, and he says, tonight you won't have to come back next week. And that's the first chip I took. And at that meeting, there's some older people here who are long-timers in AA that I'm looking at now, and I was going to this, they were taking me to this crazy meeting out in Farmersville. And it was crazy and wild, and the building was right next to the railroad track. It was the old Lions Club building, and the building was falling off the foundation, and each time a train went by, it'd fall more, you know. But it was there was good meetings, and Don W. was talking that night, and he was chairing the meeting, and when he got through, he was talking about the incomprehensible demoralization that we get when we go through this disease. And he says, if you don't want to feel that again, you don't have to, one day at a time. And then he called on me and said, Bubba, you're first tonight. And, you know, I had never shared before. And as a young person growing up, there was six of us boys and one girl in my family. And the guys, we weren't allowed to cry. You know, men don't cry, but my sister could. And I guess I had a lot of emotions inside me because I stood up and I said, my name's Jerry, and I don't know what I am, but I need help. You know, and that was the beginning. And that's when Butch and Grass grabbed hold of me, and we did that third step prayer over at my muffler shop, you know, on that off floor of the office, the three of us. And good things started happening to me. I finally started feeling good, you know, because going through this DUI, the night they left me out of jail, one of my biggest sponsors, I had a lot of sponsors that would, if without them, I couldn't afford to tournament fish and do what I did. And one of my better sponsors saw me about four blocks from my shop, you know. And I had, I'd been beat up pretty good that night because I'd talked about the highway patrolman's mothers and things like that, you know, going to jail. And I looked bad, rough. And I go a back way. I walked not Mooney Boulevard. I walked on Central Street there. And because my shop was right off the corner of Mooney and Walnut. And who picks me up? But my biggest sponsor, you know. And God, guys, when I got here, I felt about that tall, you know, and I felt worthless and ashamed. And but through this program, I've been able to work through those steps, and I know now why they're in the order that they are, because if for me. I don't like to tell anybody how to do this program. I'll share with you how I did it, but I'll never tell you how to do it. And people talk and tell me how to do it, I turn them out. You know, I tune them out. But if you tell me how you did it, I'll listen to you till the cows come home. And so anyway, jumped in this thing, and through those steps, started off real basic. I did have a terrible temper when I got here, and I had a lot of anger in me. And Grass were there at the shop, and I was having a deal with a customer, and I got a little out of hand, you know, like belligerent, foul language and stuff like that. And when the man left, they told me, he said, well, they talked to me and they told me, you've got to go home and you've got to pray for that guy. You know, pray for him. And so the next morning they asked me, did you pray for that man? And I said, you bet I did. Well, what did you pray? And I said, I prayed that God would kill the son of a bitch, you know. And and I was, you know, it. That's the way it was. But through working through these steps, a psychic change started taking place inside me. And, you know, I realized that all the things I had been through and the things I had done and had near-death experiences, you know, and some of the activities I did, that God was always with me. He never left me, but I left him. And I'll tell you why. I used this, and it wasn't an excuse. My father died, and like I say, from this disease, and I was with him when he died. And 6 weeks from the day my dad passed away, my mother, back then, they call it an aneurysm now, they call it a cerebral hemorrhage. And she went to the hospital, and she lingered for 2 weeks, and she passed away. And family doctor down there called me up and told me about 4:30 in the morning. He says, Jerry, I'm sorry to tell you, but your mom just expired. I hung up the phone, and I was going to put my fist through the wall, and I hit a stud, you know, and broke my wrist. And I said, you know, if there is a God, he has nothing for me. And I pretty much got away from all the fundamental and the morals and things that I was taught as a young man. And I lived that way. I chose to live that way. And I learned that God gives us enough rope to hang ourselves, if, you know. But the spiritual part of this program, Butch and Grass told me, and they told me in very simple words, says, Jerry, this is not, there's a difference between religion and spirituality. Said religion is for people that don't want to go to hell, and spirituality is for people who've been there, you know. And little simple phrases like that, I use them today, you know, when I share or talk, because that's what got through to me. I tried to complicate everything I did in my life. I tried to complicate it, you know, and they say keep it simple. That's what it means around here to me. Keep it simple and listen to the simple things. And then I learned by doing this and working through these steps of this program and having God back in my life, well, or I was back in his life, my whole life started changing. And like any good alcoholic, you know, if a little bit's good, a whole lot's better. And I was duly addicted when I got here. I did some of that freeze-dried alcohol, you know, that we put up our nose to enhance the drinking, and that's all I'll say about it, because I firmly believe that 95%, and I say this because 95% or more of the people that come in to these programs today are duly addicted, and 95% of the people are introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous through the Alano Club. And that's why I'm still a firm member, always will be, of the Alano Club. I try to make at least 2 meetings a week there, sometimes 3 when I'm in town, and share what I've been through, just like I'm talking to you tonight. I'm not trying to impress you. I'm trying to let you know where this disease can take you and where it took me. And, you know, that doctor told me if I drank again, I wouldn't live to see the new year. Well, I've lived long enough to retire. I've been retired for 9 years now, the end of February. I went through a divorce when I was 6 years sober. And that was the most devastating thing that I went through in my life. Mainly because of what it did to my children. And it took me a while to get their relationships back and for them to trust and love me. And I have that today. I have that because of this program. And I'm good friends with my ex-wife today, you know, and I choose to be because I want to be. I've lived long enough that I have 6 granddaughters, you know, and granddaughters. I would have missed all this, and I've been through. You can go through life if you try to live God's will. You can go through things in life. I've been through 3 heart procedures. I have stents in my heart. I've been through cancer surgery twice, and I'm on this side of it. And there's peaks and valleys, you know. But all through all of the bad things that I've went through since I've been sober, I haven't thought of drinking. The only time I thought of drinking after the obsession had been removed, and that's something that I'm really grateful for, because about 7 months sober, 7 months into the program and actually working the program, I realized that the obsession to drink had been removed, because everything I did in my life, I had alcohol or freeze-dried alcohol in my system, and I didn't know how to live without it, you know. And when I realized that I didn't have that obsession anymore, we were at a meeting after a meeting, and Grass and Butch, they would haul me to Denny's, and I told them, I don't like Denny's, and I don't like anyone that does, you know. And and I told them that I was, you know, that this had happened, and that I was scared. I was afraid, because I had never felt this feeling. And they told me one thing, and I'll always remember. They said, well, that obsession is gone, and it'll stay gone as long as you keep your spiritual part of your program in order. If you don't, it will return. And so I've tried to remember that all these years. And so it's, you know, life is good. I get, God has been good to me. I try to give back as much as I can to the program. For first 18 years of my sobriety, I sponsored a lot of people. And today I have people ask me to sponsor them, and I tell them why I don't sponsor, because I am retired. I want to be able to travel, and I can't give them the time that I need to, but I direct them to people in the program that will sponsor them. And I will sit and give them the time that I can. And I feel really blessed that God has seen fit for me to live as long as I have, and have the life that I have. I've been able to I'm remarried. I have the lady is a very good woman. She's good to me, and she's good to me because I'm good to her. And I try not to do to her what I did to my first wife. Because I was a cheat, you know. I did things that I'm not proud of today, but things that all of us do behind the influence, you know, and under the influence of drugs and alcohol. And I don't do those things today. And so I come to meetings, and when I'm asked to share, I share. The people in the community need help. I try to help, and I try to give as much of my time as I can. And Bill Pransman has been at trying to get me to come here for about 2 years, and he finally buckled me down. You know, and that's why I'm here tonight, because that's another thing. Early on, Butch and Grass told me, when you're asked to do something, you never say no, because there's a reason you were asked. So, and it wasn't that person asking you, that was God working through that person to ask you, so you don't say no. You're saying no to God. And that's kind of my story, guys. I went through a living hell with this disease, almost died from it, and did quit for several times. And I was able to quit for long periods of time, but this last time, I couldn't quit. The disease was killing me. But Dr. Gettle told me, he says, if you'll do what I tell you to do, exercise and eat the diet that I'm giving you, he says, your liver is one organ in your body that will rejuvenate itself if you haven't went too far. And he says, let's pray that you haven't went too far. And, you know, I did what he said, and I'm still kicking today, you know. The only thing bad about getting a lot of time and a lot of good life in sobriety is you get old. And I was, like I say, almost, well, it was in September, I was 48 years old. In December, I turned 49, and I'm 72 years old now, and still kicking, you know. But I don't feel 72, because I try to live a good, clean life. And like I say, I insist on enjoying life and having fun. And I still get to do, I'm not only an alcoholic, I'm a fun junkie, I like to say. And I still insist on having fun, and I do enjoy life today. And I get to, I still have my bass boat. I don't fish tournaments anymore. When I got sober, I had to deflate my ego. And that's one of the main things we have to do. And I couldn't get up there and win that bass tournament, get the trophy and the money and stick my chest out, you know. I tried it for the first year and it didn't work. And so I don't fish tournaments anymore, but I do have my bass boat. I fish when I want to. I golf when I want to. And my wife and I, we have street rods. We do the car shows. And I've always been a speed freak, you know. I like, love speed. And so that's something that you can look forward to, is the things that you enjoy in life if you work this program and, you know, thoroughly turn your will and your life over to the care of God as best you can, or as you understand. And these things just naturally come. And in the big book, one of the most attractive things to me in the beginning was it said that if we would do these things, that we could live in the mainstream of life and have a happy, healthy life. And I couldn't live today. I couldn't go to strictly AA meetings all the time, but I get to live in the mainstream of life, you know. I get to do my thing. We get to travel. I get to meet people all over the world. And I'm just really grateful that I took some good advice from people that had been here before me, and that I have this years of sobriety that I have. That's no feat, but it just means that I've lived a real good life longer than some of the ones that are new in the program. But the new people, if you stick around, give this thing a chance, because it literally, God and AA saved my life, and I'll forever be grateful. Thank you.